Hi, this is Taylor Stuber.
And this is Sean Smithgall. We are both clinical pharmacists, faculty members, and your hosts for The Postgraduate Pharmacist. Welcome back, Sasso Squad, and any new listeners to another episode of The Postgraduate Pharmacist, where we're all about helping you separate and stand out as you prepare for postgraduate training.
From current events to expert advice, we bring you up-to-date content every other Monday related to postgraduate training.
Join the Sasso Squad today and follow us on Twitter at PG Pharmacist or Instagram and LinkedIn at The Postgraduate Pharmacist.
And check out our website at postgraduatepharmacist.com where you can get all of our latest content.
If you love the show and want to support what we're doing, check out ways to spread the word on our website or buy us a cup of coffee. We could always use the caffeine.
Welcome back, Sasso Squad. We are here bringing you another episode in our PGP Fundamentals series, this time on reference writers. Reference writers are a crucial component of your residency application, and it's important that we talk about this as part of our series. I will be hosting this show alone as Sean, just like Disturbed, is down with the sickness. So hopefully I'll be able to fill his shoes and mine accordingly. We're excited to bring you this episode because it's something that might not be as intuitive as other parts of the application, but they can certainly have a large and lasting impact. And just to kind of highlight that, there's actually been a recent review article published in early 2024 in the Journal of the American College of Clinical Pharmacy, which looked at different components of a residency application that predicted on-site interviews. And what they found is that most reports that had something to do with measures of interviews for residency programs found that letters of reference and their components might be one of the strongest factors associated with obtaining a pharmacy residency interview. Another critical component of that is how those letters were constructed. So just to kind of reiterate, I would encourage you to go back to one of our earlier episodes, episode number 7, which is the insights and tips on requesting and writing letters of reference, which primarily focuses on the reference writers and how they should approach writing their letters, but also a little bit of what candidates should expect. With this episode, we hope to provide a lot more insight for you, our listeners, on how to approach reference writers, because they can have such a large impact in the process, and your approach to them is crucial. And to help us cover this topic, we have a special guest joining us today to tell you everything there is to know about letters of reference for postgraduate training. We are excited to welcome our guest, Dr. Brandi Bowers. Dr. Bowers is a faculty member at the University of Missouri, Kansas City School of Pharmacy at the Missouri State University or Springfield Satellite Campus, and she also happens to be a colleague of mine. Brandi, thanks for being here today and welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is my first podcast ever to record, but I'm a longtime podcast listener, so I'm excited to be here and try to live up to the knowing everything about residency letters that you just billed me as.
Well, Sean and I always say after you record your first one, you are officially a podcaster. And I think a lot of your listening and insight will help you out in this. So we are excited for you to join us today. So I know you a little bit and about your background, but would you mind sharing with our listeners your story and your personal professional journey that led you to where you are today?
So my story is kind of fun because it draws a big circle. I'm originally from Arkansas. When I was in high school, I knew I either wanted to be a pharmacist because of some family friends or a teacher, which was like the kid dream that I had, that I was going to be a teacher someday. And I got an internship through my high school in an eighth grade math class, and I got a job at a pharmacy, and I quickly learned that I had no interest in teaching eighth graders anything. So pharmacy was the road. And so I jumped into pharmacy. That's what I wanted to do from the moment I stepped onto my undergraduate campus, was what's actually here at Missouri State University. I got a math degree at Missouri State University, knowing that I was going to pharmacy school, but I'm a weird kid who thinks math is fun. Went back home to Arkansas for pharmacy school, and I did that at UAMS, University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. And kind of discovered through that, I loved community pharmacy. I'd worked community pharmacy for a long time, but discovered that AmCare, ambulatory care, gave me more time with patients. And that's really kind of where I felt I fit. And so left pharmacy school knowing I wanted a residency, knowing I wanted to do ambulatory care. Faculty kind of hadn't really made it back into my brain just yet. I did my first year of residency at St. Louis College of Pharmacy and Mercy Hospital. So did an inpatient first year of residency. I wanted a well-rounded experience, and I found that there. Did my second year of residency in ambulatory care at Cox Health here in Springfield, which is where I first got plugged into UMKC through some of my residency rotations. So if you're hearing the theme here, residency got me to where I am. That's why I love to talk about it, because I ended up teaching pharmacy. And in that curriculum, I teach a lot of our biostats, so teaching a lot of math. I just chose to do that to like 18th graders instead of 8th graders. It worked out that way.
Well, that's awesome. That's such a fun journey. I know being here with UMKC, we've had a lot of close ties to Arkansas. We border it, obviously. But with some of our faculty, I know a lot of people come from that area. I experienced firsthand last summer when I went down to go striper fishing in Arkansas and got all the details from everybody about who the best person was to go to, where to go, and all of that. So it was great to have. Also, I think we've had a lot of similarity in our path. We've always both loved math. I loved math and science and didn't really know that I wanted to do pharmacy until a little bit closer, but always loved teaching, always loved helping other people. So it kind of just ended up that way and still love doing it. But thank you for joining us today. We'll go ahead and dive into the topic. I guess just starting out and being very basic, having a broad overview, what's the purpose of letters of reference and how does their importance differ from the rest of the residency application?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And what I left out of my intro is that I am actually plugged into a PGY1 program and several PGY2s in ambulatory care. So I get the opportunity not only to write letters, but to read them pretty often. And the way I think about residency letters of reference is really the idea of they tell me who you are. Your application tells me what you've done, but the letter is going to be where someone tells me who you are in a work setting. How do you respond to different adversities or really good days? What do you value the most? Where are you growing the most? Where have you already grown? So it kind of rounds out that picture from your paper application.
That's a really good point. I love how you just captured that. Just a very basic sentence, and that it captures who you are. And I think that's such an important piece because they're filtering through a lot of these applications. They're seeing a lot of similar things over and over, you know, leadership positions, rotations, work experience, and things like that. This really gives them a first glimpse into what type of person you are, how you're going to handle those challenges and obstacles that are bound to occur during residency. Thinking of a letter of reference, it sounds more like a one-page letter that somebody might write for you. Maybe you've had experience with that before pharmacy school and asking for a letter of reference, but with this, it's obviously a little bit different. It's more of a standardized form. It's almost a survey in a sense that reference writers will fill out. So can you elaborate on what items are included in that letter of reference form?
Yeah, so there's definitely a part of it that feels very survey-y if you're the writer. So the beginning of that's really going to have just some basic facts about how I know you. So where did we meet? How long have we worked together? In what environment did we work together? And then there's going to be a list of characteristics that they've defined that they want me to kind of rate you on if I'm writing a letter about you. All the way from doesn't meet expectations up to consistently exceeding expectations. So kind of some form stuff. But under that, there's going to be some big text boxes for me to fill out where I'm going to get to talk about what kind of practice do I practice in and maybe what's unique about that you did with me. What was your workload? That's one of my favorite questions. How was your workload during that time? Because it allows me to kind of calibrate. If you were with me in a time when we were implementing a new service, I get to highlight that for you and say that our workload was different during that time. And then what are some areas of strength that I noted through working with you? It asked me for two of those in particular. And then what are some areas that I would see you grow in a residency, kind of those areas that are really kind of focus areas for you going into residency to make sure you hit them hard and grow in those areas before I wrap up with kind of any final comments. So
I think you captured it very well. Obviously, there's been a little bit of a buzz in the pharmacy world recently, maybe a little bit less now as of recording this episode, but definitely in fall of 2023 when they decided to update the form close to when the applications were going to be due. So people were a little bit surprised, I guess is a good word, seeing that new application form. But I think after going through it, most people are probably less apprehensive than they were before. And we go over those details in episode 51. If you want to go back to listen to it, and we kind of highlight some of those changes. But I think it's, I think from a good general overview, you captured it very well. I also think it's important that applicants themselves know what's on that form and what they're being asked to address from a reference writer standpoint. Because I think, and we'll get into this in the next question a little bit, that will help quite a bit with these reference writers. And they can kind of guide you to who you might select as your reference writers or who you may ask to serve that purpose.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. And I would even encourage students to use the language from the reference form when you're discussing with your reference writers. So if you can say, I'm hoping you can speak to, and then you list those characteristics of that form, you can almost think through, if you're trying to put together a puzzle of showing I'm someone that can meet all these characteristics, you can think through, well, here's the person that can talk about these 3 to 4 things. Here's this person who might talk about a different set. And I think it can be a guide for both you and your reference writers for kind of where they fit in the puzzle of telling that story of who you are.
Yeah, that's such a good point. You know, if they're on a critical care rotation, they might not have the opportunity to communicate with patients, or that preceptor might not have observed that. Asking a different preceptor that has observed that, that's just one example that always comes to mind for me. And if you're not exactly sure what those characteristics are that Brandy's referring to or mentioning, we'll make sure to link that form in our show notes. So make sure to check those out below so you can review, but it's also on ASHP's website. So based on those items that you've kind of listed, who should applicants target for their reference writers? Or what's the best mix? I like how you were talking about a puzzle. And as Sean always says, if you were here and trying to figure this out, what's the secret sauce for what reference writers to ask?
I think that's a great question. Looking at the article from JACCP that came out that kind of talked about what RPDs are looking for in letters, it was really reassuring to me that it backed up what I've been saying to students and that we're kind of all on the same page. In that I think there's a big focus on relationship, first of all, for letter writers. You want someone that actually knows you, because if their job is to tell people who you are, they need to know who you are past the paper application. And so making sure that you've got an established relationship with that person where they'll be able to speak to that. And then thinking through, what did you do with that person? And I think this is a big one. What kind of feedback did you get from them, right? Because you're hoping they can speak to your strengths and your improvement areas. And if you reflect on your time with them, and most of the time you talked about all the things you're doing well, and you never got to the space where you talked about where you were growing and how you were growing, you may not be able to predict what they're going to put in that letter. And you want to be able to predict the puzzle that's being put together. So you want people that you have a relationship with, that have watched you do work, that have then commented on that work, both in the ways that you were doing exceptionally and the ways that you're still growing, because that's what's going to give a letter writer that packs a punch, at least for me. And I think our RPDs are telling us the same thing based on the evidence that's been published.
That's such a good point. I think this also allows you to bolster or compliment other parts of your application. If you know what type of feedback they're going to mention, what they're going to say in that letter of reference, it can really help build a cohesive application. And that's material that you can include in your letter of intent. You know, things that you want to work on during residency, those could be open conversations with program directors and preceptors when you interview there, because they're not looking for perfect candidates. That's not the point of residency. The point of residency is to continue to build on your skill set that you've acquired during school and continue that growth. And so being able to have transparent conversations about where those areas of growth are is so crucial and important in your development, and how you respond to that feedback is also crucial and important.
Yeah, and I think another thing that really stands out to me when residency candidates ask me kind of what am I looking for in a perfect candidate, I often respond with that residency is certainly a clinical year. I don't think any of us would deny that. But residency to me is more about personal growth. I can look back on where I was at the end of my APP year, where I was at the end of my PGY1 and PGY2, and see so much growth of who I am as a grown-up and a person and how I tackle things. And so I'm looking for letter writers and candidates that are speaking to that are talking about how do I face challenges? How do I receive criticism? What do I do when I have too much on my plate? How do I respond? Can I recognize burnout? Can I respond to burnout? And again, I think that came through from the RPDs. They're saying soft skills are important. And so we kind of typically, at least personally, what I heard as a student, the typical mix is one faculty member, one clinical preceptor, and one person from work. And I think for a lot of us, maybe that works really well because we have people in those buckets that can fit those criteria and they can speak to our work and they can speak to our soft skills. But that's not the case for everyone. And so I would challenge you to focus less on title and more on what they can say about your work when you're choosing those people. Certainly you need clinical preceptors. I'm not telling you not to do that. But really thinking through who are the people that know you best in that way.
Yeah. And again, that just relates back to those characteristics that they're commenting on. How can they talk to those things and what specific examples can they provide? Because that's going to be the most valuable piece to people and programs that are evaluating those letters. So all very good points. And one thing I also wanted to mention that I think can be a misconception, I certainly thought of it that way myself whenever I was a student, but you don't necessarily need to have the top leader at your school or your organization write your reference letters. When in all actuality, that actually might not be very helpful because they're not going to be able to talk to certain characteristics. They're not going to know you on a very personal basis necessarily. I'm not saying that isn't the case in all circumstances, but in most cases they are. But oftentimes, they're not going to be able to comment on those clinical skills or soft skills, as you were saying, which is the majority of what's being evaluated on that letter. So I think that's just important to kind of keep in mind that you want to make sure you're asking people that can talk to those points. Thinking about that, having those ideas in mind, what would be your approach and the best way for you, in your opinion, to secure reference writers? What would you tell a student if they were asking you, how do I obtain my reference writers, especially in regards to timing of rotations, application season, and things of that nature?
Yeah, I think a few things. We can maybe tackle timing first because I think that's maybe the most straightforward. Application season, I usually tell students that, you know, by mid-October, you need to know if you want a comfy residency application season, by mid-October, you need to know whether you're ready or not. So I think any rotation, personally, October or before, you can ask those questions in your midpoint or final evals. You can kind of say, hey, I'm interested in residency. I would go ahead if you think they're going to be someone, you know, they are your crit care preceptor and you are going for a crit care residency. I think it's okay to go ahead and say, you know, based on our time together, would you be willing to write me a positive letter of rec? And we'll come back to that wording here in a minute. I think November, December, I'm probably going to float that idea earlier in the month and just say, hey, I'm hoping that based on our time together, you might be willing to write me a letter. just so they can kind of know that, because that timeline is going to come up really quickly at the end of December. Obviously, any rotation past that's not really going to be able to write you a letter. And so unless you've done a project or something else with them outside of that time. If it is someone that you're not rotating with, it's someone that you have a more of a long-term relationship with, I would probably honestly aim for October, just because of that timing of that residency season, to go ahead and know you have those people kind of on your team and ready to go.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I would say with the time frame too. It gives the reference writers some time to kind of gather their thoughts and see how many people they might be writing letters for. Oftentimes, I know certain preceptors have specific things they might want a student to fill out, maybe a form or a table that can help them be informed to help write the best letter possible based on their interests, career goals, and things of that nature. So that gives them some time and flexibility to do that as well as possible. I think oftentimes if they ask me in a June rotation, would you be willing to write a reference letter for me later? I just say, yeah, just make sure to reach back out probably sometime mid to late October, maybe early November, somewhere in that time frame, a month or so before they're going to be going to mid-year and starting on those applications, just so we can make sure we're on the same page and just a good time to touch base.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that you made a good point about don't forget to reach back out to the people that you've lined up. I have had that happen where I tell someone, yeah, like, I support you, I'm in this, maybe in July. And then I don't hear from them until December 15th. And I'm like, well, yeah, I said it then, but now maybe, you know, I've taken on other letters, or maybe now the fact that you waited till December 15th to remind me maybe speaks to your time management in a different way than I felt in July. And so making sure that you're kind of keeping up with all those kind of people that you've asked. And that doesn't mean you have to ask everyone that you have kind of had that conversation with, but certainly if you're going to follow through and send them a letter of a letter request, to do that kind of in that mid-October, early November timeframe so they can prep. You also asked me about how to ask. And so I thought this was the cheesiest thing ever when I learned it as a student, to say, will you write me a positive letter of reference? Like, I thought, I hated it. I did it because they told me to, but I hated it. And what I've found being on the other side of that equation is that makes me much more thoughtful in how I respond, because I'm able to sit with that and think, is what I'm going to write be received positively by the other side, right? Because I might have, as a faculty member, I might have a really good relationship with a student, enjoy them, love them as a person, want to spend time growing and learning with them. But maybe the things I'm going to have to write in that letter based on my direct observation won't be received positively, because I have to write about those specific characteristics I'm asking about, right? And I have to give those examples. And so being asked in that way makes me be more thoughtful and positive, or not positive always, but more thoughtful in my response. So I think that's important. The other thing I would say is go ahead and start using that language when you ask. So I would say, would you be willing to write me a positive letter of reference I'm hoping you can speak to? And then give them the things you're hoping that they're going to fill in for you in that puzzle. Because again, that's going to let them think, well, can I really say that Brandy did a great job at her speaking with patients, right? They're going to be able to start settling into that and responding in that way. It's really helpful to have that thought process already started when we're having that early conversation about a letter. Because I'll be honest, I've had students ask me that maybe were my advisee, or I had them from IPPE early in their career, but didn't have them for a later fourth year rotation. And they didn't do that. And I said back to them, I can write positive things about you, but I think there's someone who can say something bigger and better. And they come to me and say, no, here's what I need you to say. Do you remember when? And we saw this happen, and remember how I grew, and I'm hoping you can really talk about this. And then I say, oh yeah, I can talk about that. If that's the puzzle you need, I'm there for you. And so having thought through that ahead of time helps you have more fruitful conversations with your letter writers.
Yeah, I like that. In the last example of having those specific things, maybe if it's been a while, or you know, you had them or worked with them earlier in their career, I think that's a good point, especially for places that might you might have had more interaction with your faculty a little bit earlier on. And that's a good point you brought up there. What's your preference? Do you prefer that they ask you for the first time in person or an email? What's the proper etiquette that way?
This is another thing that I feel like there's several things in the residency process. I feel like COVID has shifted my perspective on a little bit. I still think that the best of the best, cream of the crop, is in person. And I would encourage every student to do that. However, we also have students who rotate, you know, 4 hours away, and then they need to get in touch with that preceptor. Do I expect them to make that 4-hour drive to ask that? No. And so I think there is a measure of professional judgment here to make that call. But in general, I would say first ask in person, if at all possible. And first ask kind of at a time that makes sense. Like, don't catch them in the hallway when they're on the way to rounds and say like, hey, I was just wondering real quick, would you be able to write me a residency letter? But kind of thinking through, being thoughtful about their time so that they can respond in a way that is what you want to seem like a prepared and professional person when you make that response, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's probably the same response I would have given as well. I do think there are situations where an email is appropriate. You know, if you're a student who might not be dead set on residency at the time that you have a rotation with a preceptor, and you decide later on in the rotation year that it is something you want to do, and now you need to secure them, but your rotation is 2 hours away, I think it's totally appropriate to reach out to them by email, as long as it's a well thought out, well written professional email, and even offer the potential to meet virtually, to touch base and have that opportunity if they want to talk a little bit more. But I definitely agree. I definitely think having that built-in time during midpoint and the final evaluation, be thinking about it then, like you mentioned earlier. I think it's just a good time where you're usually one-on-one. You have time to sit down and discuss those types of things about your career, your goals, your future. So I think it's more natural for it to come up in that situation, and it's just a good opportunity. So I know most programs, the standard requirement is 3 letters of reference. So should you just ask 3, or are there situations where you might want to ask more than that? Because you can attach different ones to different programs. So I just want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think a couple just off the cuff comments. One is, remember that these things take a significant amount of time from your letter writers. And so I think you always want to be intentional when you request that time, because you should also recognize that it's happening around the holidays. And so many people are trying to fit your professional needs, and they want to support you in that, but they're fitting it around their family's personal needs as well. So always being really thoughtful, not kind of just sending out that blanket request to, I don't know, 6 people for all of your programs. But I also don't think that should hold you back. If there is, say that you're someone that has multiple interests, and there are some programs that you have that are very critical care heavy, some that are more, you know, ID or internal medicine heavy, I think it does make sense to tailor the letters to the programs you're asking. So what I mean by that is you might have 5 people that you ask for letters, but all 5 of those people may not write for all of your programs, because you may have your ID preceptor and your project manager write for the program that requires you to select your own research project and has 2 required ID rotations. And you may have your AmCare preceptor write for the program that has a lot of patient interaction because they man the patient phones for the outpatient pharmacy or something like that. So matching your letter writers to the skills you're going to be required to do, I think, is totally appropriate and encouraged. That shows a lot of reflection and thought about what you need and what you want. But blanket asking extra people just because, it kind of goes back to the title thing we talked about earlier. Don't do things just because in this process. It costs money and it costs time. Like, do things on purpose in this process. So,
yeah, I think this goes back to being proactive about asking these reference writers, trying to realize they have a lot of other responsibilities and respecting their time as much as possible, and knowing that they're trying to help you with your career goals and want to respect yours as well. So getting those references in as soon as possible.
Yeah, and I think one thing, sometimes I run into students think that I'm going to be offended if they don't ask me to write for all of their programs, and that's never the case. If you've done it with intentionality and you say to me, you know, I'm applying to 6 programs, I think I'll need you to write for 3, I'm going to look at that as a total win. I'm not going to be upset about that. A win for me in time, a win for you in having thought through what you need from me and how I can best support you. So sometimes I think it's that they're just afraid that they're going to think that I don't have good words to give to that program or something. But a preceptor, reference writer that is there for you is going to want to meet the needs that you have defined for yourself. So I think be okay kind of tailoring that as you need to.
But I certainly think if there's some intent behind having a certain reference writer for a specific type of program or for a different program, I think it's totally reasonable as long as you're showing some professional initiative with that. So moving on to the home stretch, we've touched on this a little, but what should you do to follow up with reference writers, either close to time, during, and then after the application season?
Oh man, I love that you asked this question, because that after piece in particular is something that's fun. But I think close to the application, I think we've really talked about that. How do you ask? When do you ask? When do you go back? During application season, we kind of talked about getting your reference writers their information by early December. I would say usually the week after mid-year is the latest that I want to hear my final programs that you're applying to. I do ask my people that I write for to send me the most current copy of their CV, a draft letter of intent. It doesn't have to be perfect, just something that shows me what they're telling programs about themselves. Because remember, I'm part of that story. And then also a list of programs they're applying to and why they love that program, so that I can understand why they think it's a good fit. And I'm doing kind of my own analysis on the website of, here's this program structure. How am I going to talk about this with this program? So I think that there's a piece of that during that is just preparing your writer to be as effective as they can be for you. And then there's the piece that the deadline, it's moved out, or it's standardized now. It's January 2nd, I believe, standardized. But some deadlines used to be like on New Year's Eve. And I'm going to be honest, I'm a faculty member. I'm off from Christmas to New Year's. And so again, I'm going to give that time to that when I'm best able to write for you. And so I usually warn my letters that I'm writing, hey, if you don't see this go in until the day of, I promise I am not going to forget about you. But if you get nervous, and you will, every single one of them does, here's how you follow up with me. So I would say make a plan with your person. Talk to them and say, hey, I know I trust you. The deadline is this date, but when should I follow up with you if I haven't seen that letter go in? When would you like me? And would you like me to email you or call you or text you so that you have that assurance as a student that it's okay to reach out and how you're going to do that? Kind of do that proactively. I don't think anyone will be offended by that. We all know the timeline of letter writing. We know when it falls and how much fun it is to fit it in around everything else. And then the after piece, please don't forget your letter writers during the fun part. When you're getting the interview requests and then you're getting matched, we want to know how things went. We want to celebrate with you, but we also want to be there if it didn't go as you planned. What I tell my students is reach out either way. We'll either celebrate and we will make a big deal about it, or we will figure out what your next step is. But either way, please let me know what the outcome is so that I can help you do that.
I love it. Definitely couldn't have said it better myself, but I love the after piece. I definitely want to know what's happened, and I want to know if there's anything I can do for you. Maybe you're going through the second phase of the match and looking for other opportunities, and certainly willing to help with that. But, you know, I spent all the time and effort to write those letters. I want to, you know, share in the fruits of your labor and see all the good things and positive experiences that have come out of it. So, like you said, just make sure to keep them in the loop afterwards. I think everybody would appreciate that. Well, Brandy, thanks for walking us through all of that. I think it's really insightful and helpful. Is there any just lingering or last minute advice you want to emphasize to leave our SASO squad with?
I think It's nothing new. We've talked about it, but the just really focusing on what can that person say about you as a person. So drop the titles, drop whatever kind of magic formula you've heard, secret sauce you've heard, but instead think about the relationship and what they can say about those characteristics and use that to guide, because that is going to speak through their letter. The people reading that letter will hear that the way you want them to, without the title, without whatever kind of perfect combination of people you've thought through of titles.
Perfect. Well, thank you for being here, taking the time and gracing us with your presence and joining us on the Postgraduate Pharmacist today.
Thanks for having me. It turns out I'm not only a math nerd, but I'm a residency nerd too. So we got to do a little bit of both of those things today.
If you want to continue to hear up-to-date topics from us and our guests, please like and subscribe.
You can listen to us for free on your favorite podcast app and check out our show notes below to see links and highlights of the episode. And remember, you can separate and stand out.